Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a very special guest. We have the author of Astraeus. She just taught me how to say that. We have Susan Maggio. She is an author, a social worker, a wife, a mother, and a podcaster in no particular order. And welcome, Suzanne.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So I just have to say, I just finished Suzanne's book that she's going to, if I don't say it right, she's going to correct me. Astraeus.
That's right.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. The two L's are like a Y. Just learned that. Astraeus. El Camino de Santiago. And I'll tell you what, guys, I could not put this book down. You know, I didn't know what it was going to be like, but it was awesome. I feel like I was walking with her. And so I had to keep reading to find out what happened to us, you know, but I wasn't really even there. So anyway, thank you for writing that book. I know you've been back there a few times. Would you like to start with how that walk came about?
Sure.
I know you saw that movie. I got to see that movie too, but go ahead. I'll let you talk.
Sure. You know, it's funny how things come up at different points in your life. I was about to turn 60. Which is a big birthday. It still feels funny to say that because I don't feel 60, but now I'm 65. But at the time I was about to turn 60, I was wanting to do something that was going to be significant. And so I had just seen the movie The Way with Emilio Estevez's movie about walking the Camino de Santiago, starring his father, Martin Sheen. And I also had just read Cheryl Strayed's book, Wild. And I loved both of them. And one afternoon, and also I love Europe. I have to say I'm a total Europhile. Anytime I can go on vacation, I always want to go to Europe. I'm a little boring that way. You know, I was with friends this weekend. They were saying, oh, I'd like to go to Japan. I'm like, yeah, maybe, but I want to go back to Europe first because that's just my thing. So
Suzanne, sorry to interrupt, but didn't you spend some time there as a child? Your parents
took
you a lot. And then you spent time in college? When were you there?
Okay. Yeah, I went to junior year abroad. I spent 6 months in England and then traveled all over the continent, which was super awesome.
Oh, yeah, I thought
so
you
I've
spent
been a lot.
Time in Spain. I thought you knew
I
that
taught,
area.
I taught in Spain for six months for the college that I teach at now. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Was that you were married or did you drag your husband?
No, it was before. It was while I was married, and it was after my youngest son went off to college. And no, I didn't drag my husband. We have dogs and chickens and fish and a home to take care of. And he loves to travel for short stints. He's not a big, kind of adventurous kind of traveler. So
did he come and see you ever? Or
he
no?
did at the end. Yeah.
Okay.
My family, my kids came over, but yeah. So what happened was, was that period of life. And one afternoon I said to my husband, I'm going to walk the Camino de Santiago. And he was watching the 49ers football game, and without looking up from the screen, he said, have a good time. And I said, no, I'm serious. And he said, no, I know you are. Have a good time. And that's how it came about. And I started making plans that afternoon.
And where did that come from? I know you watched the two movies,
But like, where did it bubble up from, do you think? Like,
well, I think, you know, for me, I have always loved to travel. And when you are raising your kids and, you know, trying to take care of your family and working, it's hard to do that because there's so many other things to kind of weigh against it. And I think once my youngest son went off to college, that was why at the time I was like, oh, I'm going to apply to teach abroad. And then after that, it was like, okay, sort of the cork is out of the bottle at this point. I could travel a little bit. I have a little more freedom. And so that seemed to be sort of the next thing, was I really wanted to get back to Europe. I had been, the last time I had been there was 2014 when my youngest son traveled, studied in Florence with his college. And it was 2019. It had been 5 years and I wanted to get back again. So that's kind of what happened.
And when did you do the teaching in Spain?
2012.
Oh, so that was before.
Yeah, before I walked the Camino. Yeah.
So that was, so he was in college. So that's when you did that. And what did you teach? Did you have to teach in Spanish?
No, I taught in English. I was teaching, it was a distance program for the community college where I teach. And so the students all came from the community colleges in the Bay Area, San Francisco area. And we took instructors. We had three different instructors. I taught psychology. One of the other instructors taught art and art history, and another instructor taught Spanish. And we went to Barcelona. That's where we were. And we had a cohort of about, I want to say, 50 or 60 students. And so it was really extraordinary. It was really one of the best times of my life.
So did you stay at a university? Like, how did you make all that? Who organized that whole thing?
There's an organization that we worked through, AIFS. I think it's American Institute for Foreign Studies or something like that. I'm not sure what it stands for. But we had fabulous staff from there that arranged everything. They arranged the classrooms and they arranged the apartments for everybody to stay in. And on the weekends, they arranged activities for us to do. So we toured a lot of amazing places. It was really pretty extraordinary.
Wow, that's fun. Yeah. Okay, so you watch the movies. Yeah. Now, I want to ask you something about Wild.
Okay.
So if I remember well, I think I read the book. I didn't watch the movie, but she stayed out in the wilderness, right?
Yes.
She didn't go to the hotels like you guys, or not hotels, but how do you say it?
Albergues.
Albergues.
Yeah.
She didn't go in every night and there weren't restaurants, right? From what I remember, she had to carry everything.
No, she was packing the Pacific Crest Trail, which is like wild, like the title of the book. It really is wild. You're out in the wild and you're walking from place to place and you're setting up your tent and you're cooking over a stove and you're carrying everything with you.
I mean, in the water, I mean, they had to put the stuff in the water. I mean, really? Wow.
Yeah.
So that was a different, that's a different kind of experience.
Okay. That's a different kind of experience. It also takes at least 3 months and I didn't have 3 months.
So. 3 months? How far do they walk? Like farther than you?
The PCT goes all the way from Mexico to Canada.
Wow.
It's a long walk.
That's a long walk.
Yeah.
My God. I walk around my neighborhood and then my knee starts hurting, you know, it's probably like 2 miles at the most. Wow. So, okay. So you say I'm going to walk the Camino and that just because when I was reading your book, I was like, oh, I want to do this too. You know, like it just sounded like the coolest thing to do. But what do you think had you say it?
Other than just desire to try something new, to do something that seemed, I don't know, exciting. And I love Europe and I love Spain. And also I was raised Catholic. The idea of a pilgrimage was not foreign to me, certainly. Okay. So I understood that. Although I have to say, and it was without a doubt an extraordinarily spiritual journey. I didn't know that going in. Like maybe I should have, because I should have thought, oh, this is a pilgrimage and it's been walked for thousands of years by people that are trying to deepen their faith. But that wasn't my focus. My focus was to do something fun and extraordinary and challenging. And I think I thought about it as it's 31, 32 days of walking and it's 500 miles and it's going to be a very significant physical challenge. So I thought about all those things.
Yeah.
And then of course, as you start walking, you realize that you really hadn't thought of anything because it's much different than you expected.
Right. And how much had you walked in preparation? I mean, did you do long walks or just walks?
Well, I'm pretty fit. I do exercise a lot. And so there's that piece of it. And yes, I did. I went on long walks in my neighborhood and in my community. And I have a bunch of friends that we hike regularly. So I had done that. But again, as I say in the book, walking on the weekends for, 8 to 10 miles doesn't really prepare you for walking 15 to 18 miles every single day, carrying 20 pounds on your back. So it's a little bit different. You can prepare, but the truth of the matter is really the first week of walking is walking yourself into shape.
Mm.
So you're getting ready in that first week when you're really walking. And those first 5-6 days are really tough.
Wow. I know I did a mini triathlon and I did all the pieces and I could swim double and I could, run double because it was a mini swim by and bike double, like in the gym, I was good. Right. Well, the day of the thing, I realized I never did them all together.
Yeah.
It never occurred to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so when I got, the swim was fine, did the bike, even though my bike broke, I kept going. And then all of a sudden I went to run and it was only 2 miles, but every step felt like a knife going through my foot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I've never.
Exactly.
Like you learn as you go, right? Who would have thought that I should have done all? Because that's what the race was. It just didn't occur. So yeah. So the first week, wow. Yeah. But you didn't get the blisters until later, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So the walk itself, just to kind of orient the listener, the walk has, it's 500 miles and you walk from France, the border of France, in a town called Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port. This is I should say that there are many Camino de Santiago's. This is the French way, the Camino Francés, they call it. And this is the, it's not the longest, but it's the most popular, the one that everybody seems to know about. So this is the one that Sheen walks in the movie. And so you go from Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port to Santiago, which is the eastern. Wait a minute, I've got my bearings screwed up. So you're walking from the east of Spain to the west of Spain as you're looking at a map. And you're walking to Santiago is the place in Spain where the bones of St. James the Apostle are believed to be buried in the cathedral. And so that's why people walk there. And people have been walking that journey for thousands of years. It's been a very, very famous pilgrimage. And so it's 500 miles. It takes approximately 30 to 31 days if you walk the stages the way they're sort of outlined. Some people walk faster, some people walk slower.
But you knew where you were going to end up each night. Walks faster, would they end up in different places?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So that's not the only way to do it the way.
Right. So what's really good about the Camino de Santiago, and I've just walked another Camino in Italy, maybe we'll get to that or not, but it was very different than the Camino de Santiago. But in the Camino de Santiago, because it's been so popular. There are all of these albergues and restaurants and hotels and places to stay along the way. So you could literally walk it faster. You could walk it slower. And so the stages are set out in many of the guidebooks. Mm-hmm. You can follow them, or you can walk half stages, or you can walk beyond the stage. It depends on what you like to do. I stuck with the stages that are in the book, and I walked that way. And then I took one day off in the middle when I had really bad blisters. I got blisters about halfway through. So I was at about the 15 to 18 day mark. And the place that I got the blisters actually is in an area that's sort of in the middle of the walk called the Meseta. And the Meseta is this long stretch of very flat, very hot walking with very little shade. Mm-hmm. And so that's what happened for me, is you get blisters when your feet get too hot. And my feet got too hot. And I didn't do what I've learned to do since, which is to stop every couple of hours, take my shoes and socks off, and let my feet cool off, and even change your socks. That's another thing you can do to kind of keep your feet cool. But I didn't do that. I kind of just plowed forward, and then I paid the price for it because I got really bad blisters. I had blisters on top of blisters. They were really bad and very painful.
I never knew that that's what blisters are from when your feet get too hot. I had
no idea. Your feet overheat. Mm-hmm. And you wear, so your feet are rubbing against your socks and your shoes all the time as you're walking. And so the hotter they get, right, the more friction causes the blister. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So you have to be thoughtful about making sure you give your feet time to breathe. But it does require, you know, sitting down every couple of hours, taking your shoes and socks off and resting.
And were there places to sit along the way? Well,
exactly. That's the beauty of the Camino de Santiago, the Francés, is there are so many cafes. You could stop and have a coffee or just a soda or just sit, you know, along the road. You know, yeah, there's plenty of ways, places to stop.
So when you were walking, I pictured you like away from the towns. Were you walking like through towns, or was it a separate path?
It's both. So you walk in the middle of nowhere. You walk through these beautiful towns, particularly in Galicia, which is at the end of the walk. The region of Galicia is beautiful, beautiful stone buildings. You walk through these old little towns. You walk through vineyards in the region where they make Rioja wine. You walk along the highway. There are times that you're really walking along the highway. You're walking on paved road. You're walking on dirt road. It's a combination of things.
And is it marked? Like, how do you know where to walk?
It is marked. It's marked very well. It's marked with yellow arrows and shells. And so you just keep following the markings and it gets you where you need to go.
Did you ever get lost and miss a marking, or
No, it's really hard to do that on subsequent ones. Yes, because they were not marked as well, but the Francés is really well marked, really well marked. Also, there are a lot of people on it. So it's not, you're rarely alone. You'll see pilgrims in front of you and pilgrims behind you. And sometimes you'll be walking with people that you've chosen to walk with. Sometimes you see people coming the other way. There are some people that are going in the opposite direction. Because, really? Of course, in the early days, you walked to Santiago and then you had to turn around and walk back. So there are some people that are walking the other way too.
Wow. Yeah, I pictured it like, I don't know, like here's the path over here and then the towns are over here, like totally separate. I don't know why, but that's... So yeah, you could actually be walking through the town. So that's why we just said we stopped for a... Whatever.
Yeah.
What were the drinks? The cafe.
So we had the cafe con leche, which is the coffee with milk. Yeah. We would have that. We would drink Tinto de Verano, which is a refreshing drink of red wine and lemon lime soda. We would drink beer with lemon lime soda. Not, you know, I mean, a lot of that stuff is you think, ooh, that's kind of a weird combination. But actually, when it's really hot and you've walked all day, it's pretty refreshing.
Yeah. Now, did you ever, I was always like, oh, like, because you were walking so much, did, I know this is like a stupid thing to say, but I got to ask it. Did you ever think of like calories or I shouldn't have that? Or you were like, I'm having whatever because I just walked.
Yeah.
That's yeah. good. That's a good yeah. thing.
You know, it's just, you're, I'm of the mindset that when you travel, you should enjoy where you are. And so, and I love food. I love good food. I love European food. I'm a big foodie. So I, you know, really loved the jamon, the Spanish ham. I enjoyed eating the tortilla, which was the egg and potato cakes that they make are really delicious. Whenever I had the chance to try something, percebes I had I was traveling following year, I went to Portugal and I had these little, they're like these little muscly kinds of things that grow on rocks called percebes, which I tried those. They have those in Galicia and Spain as well. I tried pulpo octopus, which, so, you know, I tried it all and I didn't worry about the calories.
Right. That's great. And it seems like you had I know it's not auberge. That's like the French. Say it again.
Albergue.
Albergue.
Albergue. Yeah.
Albergue. Okay. So those were like dormitory like rooms, right?
Yes. Yes.
That you'd be sleeping next to people and you were saying they were snoring. I mean, I think that would get really old, like not being able to sleep. Did you ever just get so exhausted that you would sleep through it anyway? You must. I hope so.
Yeah. No, I mean, absolutely. I did. I the first couple of days were hard to get used to it. And then you kind of get into a rhythm. You're tired.
Yeah.
Of course, there were days where it was tougher. The albergues vary. So you have these big municipal albergues where it's like in the movie, you see this place where Sheen sleeps the first night in Roncesvalles, which is the first town you come into in Spain once you cross the border. And, you know, it's a big dormitory. There are lots of beds, bunk beds in rows, you know, long rows of bunk beds. And those weren't particularly comfortable, right? Because you're in a room with a lot of people and there's men and women together and there is snoring and it's stinky, a lot of bodies. But there are other ones where there are three or four beds in a room. There are some where you can actually get a private room or a double room or a triple room. So I started walking with a couple that I met from Arizona. I met them the first night. And what we would do is we would stay in triple rooms. So the three of us would be in one room and it was a private room. So I was still sharing a room, but I was sharing a room with two people I already knew. So there's lots of ways. And there are also hotels, right? So they're also really nice hotels. And I met people who were doing that too. So you don't have to stay in those.
Right. Did they offer, did you have breakfast at the place, the albergue? I know I'm not.
Sometimes they offered a breakfast. The Spanish breakfast is very modest. It's coffee and juice and a muffin or a croissant like pastry. They don't eat, you know, a big breakfast. And sometimes the albergues offered that, and other times you would just get that in town on your way out.
And there were places that were quick. You could just grab.
Yeah.
Them. Wow.
Yeah.
And you had said, I know I'm skipping around, but when you went obviously to the south of France with your brother at the end, and it was so much more expensive, was the difference because that was the south of France and this was not, or do they keep the price down for the pilgrims? You know,
I think it's both. I think obviously the south of France is very expensive. We were in Provence, which is, you know, fancy, fancy. Yeah. And it was beautiful and lovely. But I had just spent a month staying in really simple, modest accommodations, eating simple, modest food. So it was a bit of a shock. On the one hand, it's the locale is very different and cost is different. On the other hand, it's also true that the country has contracted with many of these albergues and restaurants and hotels across the country that are on these Caminos to serve pilgrims a reduced rate. So it's a little bit cheaper. So for example, you know, in an albergue, you would pay 10 or 20 euro for a bed versus 50 or 60 a night, you know, in a regular hotel. Also, you go to a restaurant and they have what they call a pilgrim meal, and the pilgrim meal will have a selected group of items that you can order from. And that meal itself is 10 euro and it comes with wine and dessert. And so they do that kind of thing for pilgrims. So it's a little bit of both.
Why would they, is that to keep, like, why would they do that? Just to keep people coming?
Yeah, it benefits the country. You have all those people from all over the world coming to walk, and they're putting money into the Spanish economy. Absolutely.
Wow. That's so cool. Like, I had never, heard of that before.
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
It's a really smart business plan.
It really is. And people do. How do you think people hear about it? They just do, or just word of mouth.
I think it's word of mouth. I think a lot of people. I think that the movie was fantastic, and I think it just had an anniversary. I think 20th anniversary or something like that, and so they just re-released it. But I think that exposed a lot of people to it. I think there's lots of different ways people hear about it.
Wow. Now, if you're not Catholic, is it still? I mean, were there other people that weren't Catholic going?
Oh, absolutely. Catholic, right? Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It you know, it is a Catholic spiritual pilgrimage, but there were plenty of people who were walking who were not there for that reason. They were there because it was a long distance walk. They were there because, you know, they things had happened, right? They had just gotten divorced. They'd just come through some medical crisis. They were walking because they love wine. I walked with a couple just this past summer in Italy, and they were walking because they love wine, and they were, you know, going to wineries as they walked. So people walk for all different reasons.
Wow. And I know they were all different ages, right? There were young people, there were older people, and
families.
What did you say? They pushed, one of the families pushed the mother in a wheelchair.
Yeah. So that happened prior to me, my walk. So what had happened in 2015, I believe it was 2015, this man that I met and his two boys, and the mom, the wife, wanted to walk the Camino, but she had multiple sclerosis. So she was in a wheelchair, and he set about making it happen for her. And so the father and the two boys pushed her so that she could do the Camino. And then when I met them, it was 4 years later, and she had since passed away, and they were carrying her ashes to Santiago. So I got to hear all about her and about their first journey, and they were really... It was really quite an extraordinary story, and really a commitment of love to do that, because it's a lot of work, you know, but she,
I mean,
really
how can you push? I mean, I get on pavement, but if you were in the rugged or like the hill where you fell or something, how could you possibly get a wheelchair through there? I mean, obviously they did, but, or was it a special rugged?
I think you do it with a lot of help. And I also think they probably, you know, made accommodations based on what they were using to get her that way. But they were telling me, he was telling me stories about, you know, they would go, for example, to a hotel to sleep for the night, and it didn't have an elevator. So somebody would have to carry her up the stairs, right? And so those kinds of things. It was quite a journey.
Mm. Wow. That's so special, though, you know, that they would do that, right?
There's another movie that I would recommend to people to kind of get a sense of that journey. And that movie is called I'll Push You. And it's about another, a couple, a friend and his two friends where he was in the wheelchair and his friend literally pushed him across the journey. And the guy that I met, who I referred to as Oklahoma in the book, they were actually there when those guys were filming that movie. So they met them and they had a big crew. They had a bunch of people that were helping navigate that for the person. But in Oklahoma's case, it was just him and his two boys.
Yeah. Was that a true story? Were any of them? I know Wild was true. Was
yeah, yeah, absolutely true.
Way that was true. Wow. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I gotta get these. Okay, cool. Yeah. All right. So it's time for our commercial break. We're gonna take a little break, and then we're gonna come back with a little bit of a different twist when we return. See you soon.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. K-I-K-O-R-I.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary Show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to realtalkwithhillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
And welcome back, and thank you as always to our sponsor, KikoriApp.com. If you'd like to bring experiential social-emotional learning to your schools, businesses, teams, check out KikoriApp.com and schedule a time to talk to one of their wonderful employees. And then, like you saw, my books, I have to always plug them. My memoir, The Second Piece of French Toast, that was my first book that was put out in 2019. It's a very courageous endeavor. You're not allowed to judge me, but it's a great story. If you, especially if you feel like you're in a rut and stuck, it'll definitely motivate you. My third book is Your Bullshit is Your Blessing, which, you know, I had kind of found that there were two sides of life. The left side where things didn't look so good, kind of bleak, and then the right side where everything was fun and everything was possible. So I decided to, you know, I didn't decide to, I just started discovering techniques which would help me spend less time on the left and more on the right. And that's what this book is about. And then, as you heard on the commercial, Real Talk, you know, when I wrote my first book, someone asked me after they read it, one of my first drafts, you know, why didn't you speak up? And I was like, I didn't know I wasn't. So that was kind of an awakening. And I got to see, wow, I really don't speak up. And I realized I'm a people pleaser. And so this book is the result of all that and learning how to speak up when it's not easy. And if you're one of those, check out realtalkwithhillary.com and set up a time to chat. It'll change your world. All right. And now we welcome back Suzanne Maggio. This is so interesting. She's just like, you're just like a regular traveler. Like it doesn't seem, and this is her book again, Estrellas. What is that?
So, perfect.
Okay, good. I know I don't have a Spanish accent, but El Camino de Santiago, Moments of Illumination Along El Camino. Okay, a memoir. So it's awesome. Suzanne has written other books as well. And I know, Suzanne, after you went, you kind of discovered some stuff and started a podcast. Do you want to talk about all of that now?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think sort of the big moment in my journey, and this I tell the story in the book, is arriving in a town called Carrion de las Condes. And it is in, it's about 2/3 of the way through. And in that town, I was exposed to something that ended up being quite transformational for me. And that was we went to mass. There were a lot of Catholic masses that you could attend if you wanted to while you were walking. I didn't do very many of them, but I did one in Carrion de las Condes. And the reason I did was prior to the mass, I had gone to this kind of sing-along with a group of sisters, a group of nuns and pilgrims. And it was really quite moving. And I tell that story in the book. And after the sing-along, we went to the mass. And at the end of the mass, one of the sisters who had been part of the earlier evening with us gave each of us a little gift. And it was a small paper star that I actually still have. It was to remind us, she said, this is to remind you that you are the light, and that when you have an opportunity to light the darkness for others. And then she said something that really stuck with me. And she said, when we come together, right, when all the stars, all of us come together, we can light even the darkest night. And that really resonated with me. You introduced me as a social worker. That's been my career through my life. And social work is the profession of helping. And so I had spent the better part of my adult life trying to shine the light for other people and make a difference with people that were struggling with divorce and illness and addiction and all sorts of, you know, struggles that come across many of our lives. And so when I came back from the Camino, I was still sort of in that place of really trying to look at how do we show up for one another? How do we spread light? And then, of course, everybody knows what's happened in 2020, right? We went into the pandemic and everybody was isolated and a lot of people were struggling. We're still struggling out of what came through the pandemic. A lot of my students are still struggling with anxiety and depression. Isolation was very, very painful and very hard. And I think we really saw during that time how much we need one another. And so I got the idea to share stories of people who are making a difference in their community, because I felt like, you know, there's good stuff happening out there and we don't often hear about it. And so I launched this podcast. I did not know how to do a podcast. I had to learn how to do a podcast, brand new, you know, kind of, and you make all the mistakes you make as you start. But I launched the podcast, which is called From Sparks to Light. And the title is a nod to that star that I got on the Camino de Santiago. And it's the idea of figuring out what is it that lights you up? What is it that, where is your spark? And how can you use it to light the darkness for somebody else? So what I have discovered, I'm now about to start the fourth season of the podcast. And what I discovered was there are a lot of people doing a lot of amazing things across the world, not just in the United States, but across the world. So I interview a woman who is feeding the hungry in South Africa. I interviewed a person who is taking care of disabled people in Jamaica, because in many countries in the world, if you are born disabled, you're discarded because people don't have the accommodations to take care of folks, I think, is part of it. And it seems overwhelming. I have talked to people who are working on LGBTQ issues. I have interviewed people who are helping long-term survivors of HIV/AIDS. I've interviewed people who are supporting women's issues in Afghanistan. I mean, it's amazing to me all across the world, the work that people are doing to bring light. And so, so that's what the podcast's about.
How do you find them, or do they come to you?
A little bit of both. Initially, I started out interviewing people as a social worker that I actually knew. And then people would refer me to somebody else. And now it's kind of like, you know, I talk to somebody and they give me somebody else, and that person gives me somebody else. And it becomes kind of like this game of tag. But it's amazing to me. One of the ones I did recently, which I was just, I was just extraordinarily touched by, was actually, I found it in the local paper. This woman, Molly Carr, who is a virtuoso viola player. She was trained at the Juilliard School, and she's quite well known in those circles and travels the world playing the viola. She had this idea based on, you know, something that happened to her. She had an idea to try to bring music to the places that it usually doesn't get to. So she goes and she helps folks that are in prison, be exposed to music, and they compose music in the prisons and the jails. She brings performances to people that are suffering in hospitals and in isolation. And so she started this organization called Project Music Heals Us, and it's extraordinary. And she helps folks that are in prison be exposed to music, and they compose music in the prisons and the jails. She brings performances to people that are suffering in hospitals and in isolation. And so she started this organization called Project Music Heals Us, and it's extraordinary. And she helps folks that are in prison because of the third season. And those are framed around ideas to inspire. And that's the purpose of the podcast, is to inspire people to get involved in their communities.
Wow. And do you have people helping you, or do you do it all yourself?
We is me.
So you know how to edit it and produce it?
I have learned.
Wow. See, I hated that part.
It was a learning curve. In the early days, it would take me 2 days to edit an episode. Now I can get it down in a couple of hours.
Wow. Yeah. I finally got a virtual assistant, and it was the best day of my life, because, you know, you had to move the, I don't know what you use, but I had to take the music and try to move it in. And I was, oh my God, I used to mess it up every time. I'd have to start all over. I was like, no, too stressful. So, well, good for you for, wow. Woo. All right. Good. You. All right. So that's your podcast. And then I know you also have a website.
I do.
And what can people find there?
SuzanneMaggio.com. So that you can learn about me. You can have access to the two books that I've written so far. I've got the first book is called The Cardinal Club, and it's a memoir of coming to terms with my mother's death from Alzheimer's disease. My mother was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's when she was in her early 60s, right around the age that I am now. And she lived until she was 79. So by the time she passed away, she was profoundly affected by the disease, and it affected my siblings and I pretty dramatically. And in the midst of that struggle, my father passed away quite suddenly. He was diagnosed with ALS, Ugh, I always say it wrong. Amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease. And it's a horrible disease that destroys the neural connections and the motor connections in the body. Anyway, he died. And so we were left to care for her. That's kind of the gist of the story. And so it was sort of like coming to terms with all of that. So that's the first book. And then the second book, of course, we've been talking about Estrellas. So those are there. You can get information about the podcast there. All the episodes are there from prior years. It's also available on iTunes and Spotify and all the podcast places. And
search from Sparks to Light or your
from
name.
From Sparks to Light. They can look for SuzanneMaggio.com. All of that is there. You can also follow me on Instagram at Suzanne Maggio Author.
Okay.
But yeah, there's a bunch of stuff there. You can sign up for the mailing list, which I actually don't send out too many mailings, so you won't be overwhelmed with mailings. I try to do a couple a year, just let people know what's going on and what's new. Yeah, so there's a lot to, I think, a lot to look at on the website.
And we'll put the links in the show notes. So if it's easier, you can just click there. So, okay. So what have you, like, what would you say the most, I don't know, we would say profound part of, you know, the light and the star? Well, one question about the star. I thought you gave the star to somebody.
Yes, I did give my star, and then I ended up getting another one. So I still have it.
Yeah. Okay. I was wondering how you got it back.
So,
you know, you discovered kind of, you know, in the church when she says that about the stars and you, you know, the light, like what would you say is an experience of that? Or, you know, something, because I know, you know, once for me, like once I discovered that there was like light and darkness, all of a sudden things changed. Well, how would you think it's changed your life? How about if I ask it that way?
Well, you know, I think, you know, one of the stories I tell in the book, and this kind of, I think, encapsulates it for me. I think that at this time in our history, particularly in the United States, but this is also going on in other places in the world, we've become very siloed. And especially in the United States, we tend to think we're the center of the universe, right? That there's nothing else out there. It's just us, right? Big country. We all speak the same language. We don't have to worry about, you know, different countries, different rules, different borders, you know, and we can focus on here we are, right? In the middle of the United States. You're in Connecticut. I'm in California. So the coasts in particular, that's why they call us the coastal elite, right? Because we tend to, you know, think that we're, you know, all there is. I don't agree with that, but that's sort of the perception. And I think one of the things that happened for me on the Camino, and it's one of the reasons that I love travel so much, is you get exposed to different people and different ideas and different languages and different foods. I really try to encourage my students to travel. You know, they're all in school, they're trying to learn. And I say the best learning you can do is to travel. And not travel like, you know, go and only hang around with Americans when you travel. I could go on an American tour where you can speak English and you can eat hamburgers. And I mean, that's fine. But that isn't, from my perspective, that's not really the kind of travel I'm talking about. I'm talking about the kind of travel where you really open yourself up to something that's unusual, something that's foreign to you, something that you don't know. And so when I think about the light, it is like, how do we expand our experience? How do we expand our vision? How do we hear one another's story? And the Camino, for me, that was a big part of what I learned was, you know, we all have stories to tell and we need to learn how to listen, not focus so much on telling, but listening to other people's stories. So one of the stories I write about in the book is a couple of hours that I spent walking with a young man from South Korea. And that resonated with me in a way that really has never left me. He was 21 years old. He was really only 20, but he said he was 21 because in South Korea, the year you're born, you're one. So he was really, in American terms, only 20. And he had just gotten out of the military and he had been on the border for a year and a half because in South Korea, military service is mandatory. And at the time, he was in serving. It was during that time, and many of your listeners will probably remember this, where Kim Jong-un, the ruler of North Korea, was launching a bunch of missiles in response to tweeting that was happening from our president, kind of egging him on. Mm. And so each time he would tweet, Kim Jong-un would launch a missile, and then my new friend that I was walking with the Camino on the Camino with, they'd go into high alert. And he, when we were walking, he would talk to me about the fear that he was experiencing and the responsibility to know that you are responsible for protecting your country and your family and people you didn't even know. That was your job. It was on your shoulders. And here he was 19, 20 years old, and he was really scared. And he said to me at one point, you know, I wish your president would stop tweeting. And I took that information, I listened to that, and it resonated with me because what it said to me was, we often don't pay attention to the impact our actions have on others. And we all have the opportunity to make a difference in someone's life for better or for worse, right? We are not isolated. We are responsible to bring light to the world. We're responsible to make the world a better place for others, whether we know them or not. And I don't ever want to be in a position where I'm knowingly hurting someone. And so it's my responsibility to kind of understand how my actions affect others. And I think that's true for all of us. So I think that was one of the really key learnings from the walk was, you know, listening to other people's experience allows us to understand and then make changes to our own behavior. Right? So that was pretty significant for me. And I would say that's what for me, that was one of the key ahas, right? The key lights that went off for me as I was walking.
Wow. And did you, you know, obviously they talk, did you also get a chance to tell your story to people?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So absolutely. Yeah. It's both, right? It's always you're walking and you're meeting people that, you know, you're meeting people from Sweden and India and South Korea and Mexico. It was unbelievable. And all of our realities were different.
Right.
Right. And so it was fascinating.
The greeting. I didn't know how to pronounce it. Buen Camino?
Buen Camino. Yeah. Buen Camino, which means good walk. But it really was, for me, a metaphor for really saying, I see you, right? I see you. Every time you pass a person, buen camino. Every time they pass you, buen camino. You go into a shop, they say buen camino, because obviously they can tell you're a pilgrim because you're carrying this massive bag on your back. So there was this way of like literally acknowledging one another. And it was really extraordinary.
That's so great. So, all right, we got a minute left. What would you like to say? What would you like to leave people with? You know, what would be your vision for the world in 5 years or just what message would you like to leave people with?
Well, I think it's again, I think what I just said, which is we need to learn to listen to one another, right? Not listen to respond, mm-hmm. but listen to understand. Listen with curiosity. Listen with compassion. You know, the Japanese symbol for listening includes listening with your ears and your eyes and your heart and your full attention. And I would say that's what I hope we can strive for, because I really believe that if we could learn to listen to one another, we would have a much more peaceful world.
Thank you. That's beautiful. Well, thank you so much. Again, Suzanne Maggio, suzannemaggio.com. Her podcast is, where is it? All right. Tell me the name. I can't find it.
From Sparks to Light.
I have too many notes. From Sparks to Light. And her book is just wonderful. It'll have you want to walk the Camino as well. Maybe I'll see you there. Buen Camino. Thank you so much, Suzanne.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Bye, everyone. See you next week.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started getting real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.